Imagine a world where the vast wealth humanity has collectively built over centuries, roads, buildings, machines, knowledge, belongs to everyone rather than the privileged few. This is the radical starting point of The Conquest of Bread, written by a Russian aristocrat who abandoned privilege to champion anarchist ideals. This revolutionary text asks a simple yet profound question. Why, amid unprecedented technological advancement and productive capacity, do the masses remain impoverished? The answer lies in what Kropotkin identifies as centuries of theft, the systematic appropriation of collective resources by a small minority through violence, oppression, and legal manipulation. Every acre of fertile soil, every railway, every scientific breakthrough represents the accumulated labor of countless generations. Yet the fruits of this immense inheritance are monopolized by those who contribute the least to its creation. When we truly understand this perspective, private property no longer appears as a natural right, but as an artificial construct maintained through systematic exploitation. The notion that wealth belongs exclusively to its creators falls apart under scrutiny. That factory owner claiming sole credit? His machines incorporate centuries of collective innovation. His land was improved by generations before him. The knowledge applied represents humanity's shared intellectual heritage. Even the most brilliant innovators stand on the shoulders of millions. Edison's light bulb depended on countless unnamed contributors who developed glass manufacturing, electricity principles, and metallurgy. Today's tech billionaires leverage publicly funded infrastructure and university-developed algorithms. What's striking is the contrast between collective production and individualistic reward. We've created an economic model where owners extract massive value from actual producers. This disconnect between social production and private appropriation drives modern inequality and forms the basis of Kropotkin's vision. The revolution begins with recognizing that the world's wealth belongs to all of us. Every technological breakthrough, infrastructure project, and knowledge advancement represents our shared inheritance. By reclaiming this collective treasure from those who monopolized it, we create the foundation for universal well-being. What might you accomplish if freed from the struggle for survival? What gifts might you develop, problem solve, or beauty create? Kropotkin's vision promises not just material security, but human flourishing, a world where each person develops their unique capacities while contributing to collective welfare. Well-being for all isn't just a utopian slogan, it's achievable. Our productive capacity can provide universal comfort, yet we restrict production to maintain profits. Factories stand idle while people need goods. Fertile land remains uncultivated while millions go hungry. Workers are told there's no work when basic needs remain unmet. Consider why we destroy excess food while people starve, or why empty homes exist alongside homelessness. These aren't failures of capacity, but features of a system prioritizing profit over human needs. The solution is straightforward. Since production depends on collective effort and shared inheritance, its fruits should be collectively owned. All things are for all people becomes both an ethical principle and practical framework. From day one of revolution, everyone must know that a new era has begun. None shall go hungry amid plenty. The most beautiful day of the French Revolution, Kropotkin notes, was when delegates from across France worked together preparing for a celebration, uniting in common labor and glimpsing a future where work serves community rather than profit. That future still awaits us. Any society abolishing private property must organize itself as communist anarchy. These principles naturally reinforce each other. Even traditional agricultural communities depended on shared infrastructure and collective practices, while modern industrial interdependence strengthens this connection further. Notice how many public services already operate on communist principles. Libraries don't charge by pages read. Roads don't toll by mile, and museums don't price by exhibits viewed. These institutions demonstrate our natural gravitation toward collective solutions for shared resources. The wage system fundamentally conflicts with common ownership. Wages emerged from individual ownership structures and become meaningless when production means are collectively held. How can someone be paid when the community already owns the product of their labor? History shows that when governments weaken or collapse, human creativity flourishes. From medieval communes creating architectural marvels to spontaneous organizations emerging after disasters, people organize effectively without centralized control. The progression toward voluntary association represents human social evolution, not a utopian dream. Past revolutions failed because they prioritized political questions over material needs. While governments debated constitutions, factories closed and workers starved. The lesson? Secure bread first, debate politics later. In a revolutionary city, volunteer groups would quickly inventory available food within 24 hours and distribute this information within 48. Abundant resources would be freely available while scarce goods would be rationed, a system already used in many European communities. To secure ongoing supplies, the city would offer rural producers what they actually need: practical clothing, agricultural tools, useful items, rather than worthless paper money. When peasants received tangible value instead of exploitation, provisions would flow naturally. The revolution must extend to housing, clothing, and production. Workers already understand that houses belong to collective labor, not owners. Revolutionary committees would inventory available spaces, empty mansions, overcrowded slums, and redistribute based on need. Perfect equality isn't immediately necessary. Initial inconveniences would resolve in a society committed to collective well-being. Beyond material necessities, the revolution must address deeper human needs. We aren't being solely focused on food and shelter. Once basics are secured, artistic and intellectual desires emerge, varying individually but universally important. Work itself requires transformation. When workers have agency rather than acting from desperation, they naturally create more humane and efficient systems. Modern workplaces already prove this. Pleasant environments consistently outperform oppressive ones. The revolution must tackle domestic labor, historically burdened on women, through technology and community solutions. Household mechanization represents a quiet revolution, while progressive communities develop innovative shared responsibility models combining efficiency with comfort. Making work pleasant isn't merely humanitarian, it's economically vital. Satisfied workers demonstrate higher productivity, greater creativity, and better problem-solving. The future lies not in forcing people to endure unpleasant conditions, but in creating environments where work becomes fulfilling rather than exhausting. We're conditioned to believe chaos would ensue without government control, yet spontaneous order surrounds us. The European railway system, 175,000 miles of connected track allowing seamless travel across countries, emerged through voluntary coordination between independent companies, not central planning. Similarly, Holland's canal network functions through free associations of boatmen who establish sophisticated rules without government enforcement. The belief that people won't work without wage compulsion misunderstands human motivation. History shows people liberated from coercive systems work more productively, while research confirms autonomy, mastery, and purpose motivate more effectively than external rewards or punishments. From Wikipedia to open-source software to volunteer disaster response, we see people readily contributing their talents when they feel genuine ownership of their work. These examples demonstrate voluntary cooperation creates sophisticated outcomes that often surpass commercial counterparts.